All right, welcome to YAF again. Notice that the clock is missing. That way you can't tell how long I'm talking. All right, we're going to start off. I want to ask a question. We need some good stories here, all right? Here's the question. What is the most painful thing you've gone through? Mostly physical experiences here, like...
ankle reconstructive surgery.
Oh, nice.
Getting hit by a car.
Getting hit by a car.
Yep, on my bike.
On your bike. Like, did you go flying?
I blacked out. I don't exactly know. I was on my bike and then I was on the ground.
If you blacked out, we can't know the story. That's no fun.
It hurt really bad.
It hurt really bad, okay.
Sitting on a yellow jacket's nest.
Oh!
How many stings?
I don't know, but I know. My mom pulled 7 bees out of my hair.
You what? You what?
My mom pulled 7 bees out of my hair.
Wow. That sounds painful. Any other stories?
Leukemia.
Leukemia, that's a big one. Wow. What's that? Broken nose? That Andrea? Now she's embarrassed. Yeah.
Kidney stones.
Kidney stones.
Oh, supposed to be the most painful things right there.
Are they?
They're one of the strongest pain sensations.
Yikes. What else? I had one experience after a car accident. It wasn't actually painful, but I was in a car accident and I had a gash on my leg and there was like asphalt and glass mixed in it. So they shot it up with lidocaine all around and took like a steel sponge and like scraped everything out. And I was like looking down thinking, that's supposed to hurt. But it didn't. It was really cool. That was my non-painful experience. Well, we are in a series right now looking at God's voice and not finding power. But so we're following along in YAF with the epic series that we're doing at PBC, kind of tracking with the same story, and we're picking different scenes from the story as we go. So what we're doing right now is trying to look at what it looks like to hear God's voice. This season from kind of the end of the Kings until we get to Jesus, there's a lot of prophets, there's a lot of hard situations, there's a lot of times where God's people are longing for him, are asking him where he is, and are speaking of him in really unique ways. And so as we track along this period, we're looking at these people and how did they connect with God in the midst of this? How did they hear his voice? How did they relate to him? Tonight we're going to look at Jeremiah. And Jeremiah is probably one of my favorite prophets. He's got one of the longest books in the Old Testament. And the reason I like him, if you were here last week, Juan taught, and he talked about Isaiah. And what he said about Isaiah was that we have a lot of Isaiah's writing, but we don't know a lot about him. And the really cool thing about Jeremiah is we get a lot of his work, but there's a lot of his work that's very autobiographical. So we know a lot about him. And he's probably one of the few people in scriptures that we really get a sense of his emotions and his emotional experience. Apart from the Psalms, where you get a lot of emotional experience, Jeremiah writes about what he's feeling. And so you get this really cool mix of him serving God and being a prophet and bringing God's word and bringing a message, but then you get his experience and how he feels about it. And generally, he feels really bad, which is kind of encouraging, because we like to hear other people when they're going through hard stuff, because it encourages us, and we can relate to them when we go through hard stuff. So Jeremiah is this great balance between his work and the person. We really get to hear both of them. So the topic we're going to talk about tonight is pain, and what happens, how you hear God's voice, how you relate to God in the midst of pain, because Jeremiah is an expert in that. His whole life is full of pain. He goes through some really terrible stuff. And the way he deals with it, the way he processes with God, I think is both really authentic and really real and really raw and surprising in its honesty. It's more honest than I think a lot of times Christians are with each other. And yet it's also more God-focused and more spiritual and more aware of God's presence than I think a lot of times we are. So Jeremiah really has the extremes. I mean, he is honest and goes through difficult stuff, but he sees God in the midst of it. And I think that's a really good balance for us to learn from. So why don't I pray, and then we'll start looking at this guy. God, pray for us tonight as we're looking at Jeremiah and this particular passage. And I pray that you would help us to see what you want us to see. Pray that if we're going through hard stuff, that you would use this passage to encourage us. And that if we're not, that you would prepare us for hard stuff that we might encounter in the future. And mostly I pray that we would encounter you tonight through Jeremiah's words, and that we'd be just led into your presence and led into relating to you in a new way, or perhaps remembering an old way that has become forgotten. So be with us tonight, God, as we look into your word. In Jesus' name, amen. So I want to mention that this is a really good passage wherever you are. And some of us here might be in the middle of some really hard stuff, and we might be struggling with deep things, and we might need to hear somebody else struggling with deep things and hear how they do it and how they do it with God. And so this could be really relevant to you right now. And I know some of you are going through some really hard stuff. But others of you might not be going through hard stuff, and you got a new job, or you're in a new relationship, or things are great, or, you know, there's nothing really heavy going on right now. And that's great too. But I hate to be the one to tell you this, you will go through hard stuff. There will be hard things in life. And so if that's where you find yourself now, then think of this as preparation. I was thinking about this the other day. I was in San Francisco, and I was looking around all the buildings and thinking about how much work goes into building a building in San Francisco to make it earthquake-proof, right? I mean, you have to do all this extra stuff because earthquakes happen there, and they don't really in a lot of places. And for most of the time, that work is wasted, right? I mean, the building's just there, and it's all this extra money and all this extra engineering, and it's just sitting there. It's just normal. But then there's one moment where there's an earthquake, and if you didn't do all that stuff, the building falls down and bad things happen, right? But if you did that stuff, then you're ready and you're prepared. So I kind of think of this passage like that. If you're not going through something hard, you will. And this will be a passage that will help you prepare for what it looks like when you get there. So I'm going to read the passage. We're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 20, starting in verse 7. I'm going to go 7 to 18. I'll read it in, let's see, three different sections. Actually, first let me give you a little background on Jeremiah. So Jeremiah was called by God to be a prophet. He lived in Jerusalem, and he spoke to the people in Jerusalem during the last days of Jerusalem, so right before Jerusalem was conquered. And he had the most popular message that you could have for a city. Do you know what his message was? Anybody know? What? Yes. Yeah, so he got to walk around the city telling everybody, your city's going to be destroyed! And that was what God wanted him to say. So people generally didn't really like him. He got beaten up. There was a bunch of murder attempts. The king locked him up. So he's kind of a miserable guy because he had the task of bringing bad news to the city. And he told them that this was God's will, that God was in it, and there were purposes behind it. But when somebody tells you your city's going to be destroyed, you kind of don't care why. You just don't really like that person. So that was Jeremiah's experience. And what we're looking at right now is a situation right after one of the incidents that is really bad for him. He gets put in the stocks. He gets laughed at. He gets mocked at. There's kind of this arch rival that he has, a guy named Pashur. And this guy, throughout the book of Jeremiah, is constantly trying to get him in trouble. He's throwing him in prison. He's trying to get him killed, doing all sorts of bad stuff. And just before this scene, he's had him put in the stocks and beaten because of his message, because he's bringing negative news to the city. So this is what Jeremiah says, all right? Jeremiah 20, verse 7. O Lord, you deceived me, and I was deceived. You overpowered me and prevailed. I am ridiculed all day long. Everyone mocks me. Whenever I speak, I cry out, proclaiming violence and destruction. So the word of the Lord has brought me insult and reproach all day long. But if I say I will not mention him or speak any more in his name, his word is in my heart like a fire shut up in my bones. I'm weary of holding it in. Indeed, I cannot. I hear many whispering, terror on every side. Report him. Let's report him. All my friends are waiting for me to slip, saying, perhaps he will be deceived. Then we will prevail over him and take our revenge on him. So Jeremiah essentially complains to God. He talks to God and he tells God all of this terrible stuff that's going on. Now the language that he uses is really strong language, especially here in the beginning. This is very personal between Jeremiah and God. This language in verse 7, you deceived me, I was deceived, you overpowered me and prevailed. Those words have overtones of sexuality. And it's almost as if Jeremiah is accusing God of sexually assaulting him. That's kind of what's in the background of those words. It'd be like if we say, you forced yourself on me or something. You're not saying it outright, but you're using words that imply something like that. So Jeremiah is speaking very strongly about what wrong he feels God has done him. And he's honest, he's raw, he tells God that you tricked me and I got tricked by you and all this terrible stuff happened. And what I want to do is I want to pull out a few of the themes that he's accusing God of or that he's complaining of. So the first thing he says is that he feels tricked by God. And I think he says this because God told him something to say, Jeremiah said it, and because of it, he got beaten up. He became the butt of all this bad stuff because of that. And I think that sometimes as Christians, we can feel that way. Because when we go through hard stuff, when we encounter whatever difficulties we encounter, I know for me, a lot of times I feel like, well, you know, I'm working hard. I'm going to church. I'm trying my best. Why should this happen to me? And I think there's this implicit assumption sometimes that if we do what we can to be a good Christian or love God or something, then that'll somehow protect us from hard stuff. It's like a good luck charm or something. And yet, that's not the case. Christians go through hard stuff sometimes more so than non-Christians. I encounter this probably the most significant way in marriage because I entered into marriage, and I've shared a lot of this before, but I'd read all the books and I'd listened to sermons and I'd done all the Christian stuff. So I felt like going into marriage, I knew God's way to be married, right? So I was going to go in, I was going to get it right. And we're a Christian couple, we're going to have a Christian marriage, and it's just going to be, I mean, you got to work at it, but it's going to be good. Like, it won't ever hurt, right? Well, wrong. It did. And it was hard. And marriage turned out to be a lot harder than I thought. And even when we prayed, and even when we studied the Bible together, we still struggled. And we went through a really deep season of struggling and trying to figure out what does it really look like to love each other. And I felt like I'd been tricked. I felt like I'd studied all the stuff, I tried to do it the right way, and it didn't work. And I was frustrated. I thought God let me down. I thought all the stuff that I learned turned out not to work. And God was faithful in that to show me new stuff and to bring me to him in a new way. But at the time, it was really hard. So the first thing Jeremiah says is that he is tricked. He feels like God lured him into this. Then he says this, I'm ridiculed all day long. Everybody mocks me. And this is something else that can be difficult as a Christian. We can feel like we make decisions different from other people in the world. Our lives are different. We choose some things where people that don't have faith choose other things. And sometimes that draws us under ridicule. Sometimes we get mocked for that. I remember when I was in college, my freshman year, we played this game called, I think it's called Crossing the Line. Did anybody play this? Yeah, maybe it's a Stanford thing. But it's like very somber and serious and heavy and like, what's that? Not really a game. It's like a, I don't know, group therapy thing. I don't know. It's like, so you all get in a room and there's like somebody with a big booming voice that leads it and they're very serious and it's like freshman year of college thing, and you're all on one side, and the person like reads out, if you are this, then cross the line. There's a big line in the room. And the rules are like you cross the line, and you turn around, and you look at everybody else, and then you walk back. So it starts off like, if you were born in January, cross the line. And so like everybody says, like, no big deal. Or if you live in the South, cross the line. Then it gets to like more personal stuff. Like if you felt this, or if you've had this type of sexual attraction, or, you know, all this stuff. Like the point is self-disclosure in this very intense but very supposedly safe setting. And I remember, like, I'd been a Christian, and I'd taken a year off, and I traveled with a Christian ministry team, but I grew up in a Lutheran church, and I wasn't really familiar with a lot of terms, like evangelical or fundamentalist or all this stuff. And so one of the things he said was, if you consider yourself a fundamentalist, cross the line. So I'm like, well, that's probably me. So I, like, cross the line, right? And I'm, like, the only one. I'm like, oops, what does this word mean? Like, am I really? And you can't explain yourself. Like, you just do it. And then you're like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Like, do I really know what this is? And I mean, there's a lot of people who use that word in different ways, and I don't know whether I classify or not. But the point is, like, I felt like I was identifying myself as this thing that was not something I really wanted to be identified with. And I think we can feel that way as evangelical Christians. Christians don't get a good rap in media. We don't get a good rap in our society. And so to be that isn't a good thing in a lot of the places we run in. And so Jeremiah feels that for sure. He's ridiculed by the people around him. He has a negative message. The next thing he says is interesting. He says, when I speak, I'm ridiculed, insult and reproach. But then he says, if I don't talk, if I try and hold it in, it burns within me. I can't do anything about it. And I think that's an interesting observation, because that resonates with me a little bit too, that as hard as it is sometimes to follow God, I've at times in my life flirted with the idea of, well, what if I just didn't, right? What if you just threw it all away? What if I just said, that's not for me? And I've realized that it doesn't really help. Like, the hard things in life that make it hard to believe in God are still there if I don't believe in God. I just don't believe in God anymore. It doesn't actually make life easier. It doesn't actually help. It doesn't take away any of the hard things. It just takes away this belief. And then what? It kind of feels like without God, then what is there left? And so I resonate with Jeremiah saying, even if I try not to say anything, there's still this thing within me. There's still this thing that draws me back to God that I can't ignore. Then he talks about people around him who are whispering. They're whispering that they want to get him, that they want to have their revenge on him. And he sees himself as surrounded by other people who want to see his downfall. And I think this is probably true for us too. I want you to imagine two different screenplays for a movie, okay? And tell me which one you think would be more successful, all right? Screenplay A is of a young person who grew up in an atheistic home, whose father was a doctor, the mother was a lawyer. He grew up, went to a really competitive high school, went to the best college. In college, he lived with some people that were Christians, became a Christian, started going to InterVarsity, and decided that he wanted to become a pastor. And so he became a pastor and served his life as a pastor. All right, that's screenplay A for the movie. Here's screenplay B. Young person grows up, his father's a pastor, his mother used to be a short-term missionary, and he's taught being a Christian, but he's never quite sure about it, goes to college, and he starts reading about all this other stuff, and he finally decides that God isn't real, and he's going to throw it all away, and he becomes this outspoken atheist, and there's all this family conflict, and he's trying to destroy the faith that his parents taught him. Okay? Which screenplay has a better chance of succeeding? This one, right? No, right? I mean, this one. Like, people like stories of people losing faith, right? That's a popular storyline in our culture. People root for other people to lose their faith, to fall away from God, to throw away their religion. That's what our culture implicitly gets excited about when somebody who is raised conservative or raised as a believer and then they grow out of it or something. That's a popular line. And I think sometimes that our culture enjoys seeing Christian leaders go up in flames. I think they enjoy seeing people that are supposed to be good do something awful. Because I don't know why, but I think there's an implicit cheering against people of faith. And that's what Jeremiah is talking about, that the people around him, they want him to fail. And I think probably people in our lives are the same way. There's plenty of people that would welcome us saying, yeah, I used to go to church, but I just decided it was stupid. And they'd say, yeah, good for you, you know. Way to grow up, way to like cast that thing aside. And so this is what Jeremiah experiences. So we have Jeremiah, and he's going through all this hard stuff, and he speaks honestly. He says that God deceived him. He uses this really strong language. He categorizes all these difficult things that he's experiencing. And what I want to point out about what he's doing is that he's going through hard stuff, but he brings it to God. I notice that he's angry at God. He feels like God's deceived him. He feels like God has caused a lot of this hard stuff, but he still brings it to God. And that's the really critical thing, that Jeremiah, in his hurt, in his pain, even in his anger, approaches God with it. I've probably mentioned this before, but this always really struck me when my kids were really little. They don't maybe do it so much anymore, but then when they're really little and I would discipline them and they would be in tears because they would have been disciplined, they would still want to come to me for comfort. And it always struck me as really cool that even though I was the one that had punished them and in a sense caused their suffering, they still came to me wanting to be comforted from it. I think they've grown out of that now. Not really. But that's kind of like what Jeremiah is doing. He's angry at God, but he's coming to God with it. And there's something really important there, because our tendency is, if we're angry at somebody, to run away from them, to push them aside, to forget about them. But Jeremiah doesn't do that. And so out of this process of articulating himself to God, of complaining to God, of speaking his mind, something changes. So the passage continues like this. Verse 11. But the Lord is with me like a mighty warrior. So my persecutors will stumble and not prevail. They will fail and be thoroughly disgraced. Their dishonor will never be forgotten. O Lord Almighty, you who examine the righteous and probe the heart and mind, let me see your vengeance upon them, for to you I have committed my cause. Sing to the Lord, give praise to the Lord. He rescues the life of the needy from the hands of the wicked. And so this is really a similar pattern to a lot of Psalms. It starts off with the hard stuff. God, you've tricked me. God, these people are against me. God, everybody wants my downfall. And in the process of working through that, he comes to a different place where he's able to say, but God, you're with me. The people that are after me, they won't succeed. You are on my side. And he ends up saying, sing to the Lord. Give praise. I think part of what Jeremiah is doing here is he's saying this stuff not because the other stuff is gone. It's not like he doesn't feel the anger anymore, or he doesn't feel confused, or he doesn't feel frustrated. I think he says it partly to make it true for himself. And I've thought about this a lot, that there's a great power in words, that when you say something, it's almost like God in Genesis using words to create. When you say something, that speech has power in it, almost the power to create. And so when you say something like, God, you are with me, even though you might not completely feel it, saying it, dwelling on it, actually makes you feel it more. It reminds you of it. And I think sometimes we in our culture don't like that because we don't want to be fake. We place a really high value on authenticity. So we say, well, if I don't feel God, I don't want to say anything about it because that's not really true to me. That's not really what's actually true in my heart. But there's something to saying what you know to be true but don't feel is true at the moment. And there's something about speaking that way that can help you along in the process of grasping that and of feeling it in a more deep way. So Jeremiah starts by saying that God is with him. He talks about God's presence. And this is always or often one of the first things that you find in the Psalms, throughout the Bible, in times of distress, that the first thing mentioned is God's presence. Because that's one of the most important things for us. When you're going through something hard, a lot of times you just want somebody to be there with you. You know, I see this in my kids. They'll want, you know, they're scared to be in the room alone, so they just want me to like walk in and walk out, just to know I'm there. They want me to be present. We had friends a long time ago that went through a miscarriage, and we just went to their apartment and sat with them. We didn't even talk for like an hour, and we just sat there, and it was comforting just to be with them. There's something powerful about being with somebody in the midst of pain, and that's what Jeremiah starts with. God, you're with me. I'm calling out on your presence. Perhaps he doesn't feel it, perhaps he does, but he's saying it out loud. He says that others won't succeed. He says these people that are challenging me, they eventually will fail. Their disgrace will be great, not mine. And this is one of the great truths that the scripture continually tells, is that evil's not going to win. Pain is not forever. Things will get better. There is always hope. This story that we're talking about ends in something glorious. And so whatever it is you're going through, Paul says at one point, temporary afflictions can't compare to the glory of what's to come. The story ends better than it is now. That's what Jeremiah says. And then he asks God to help. He says, "Let me see your vengeance upon them, for to you I have committed my cause." So he asks God to intercede. He says, "This is what's going on. These people are against me unfairly. Do something about it. Step in." And we've talked about this before, that there is a difference between complaining and asking for help. And sometimes we think we've asked God for help because we've complained about it to everybody that will listen, but we haven't actually said, "God, will you do something? Will you help?" That's what Jeremiah does. He asks God to step in. He says, "Please, do something to help." And finally, he says, "Sing to the Lord." He wants to praise God. And that's why we start, yeah, with praise. That's why we do this in church. That's the power of singing. There's something across culture, across time in singing. There's some power in bringing voices together to do that as a community. That's what Jeremiah is encouraging. So if we stopped here, this would be really cool, right? Jeremiah was down in the dumps. He's accusing God of all this terrible stuff. Everything's happening bad. And then he talks himself through it. He gets himself to a place where he can ask God for help. And finally, he can sing to the Lord. And it's like, this is great, right? This is like if you bought a book in a Christian bookstore, like How to Talk to God When You're in Pain. This is what it would say, right? Bring it to God, talk it through. By the end, you're singing praises. And you're like, oh, that's great. It's such an easy process. I can just walk through it. It's going to work every time, right? But here's the surprise. After Jeremiah gets to this point, this is what he says. Verse 14. "Cursed be the day I was born. May the day my mother bore me not be blessed. In fact, cursed be the man who brought my father the news, who made him very glad, saying, 'A child is born to you, a son.' May that man be like the towns the Lord overthrew without pity. May he hear wailing in the morning, a battle cry at noon. For he did not kill me in the womb, with my mother as my grave, her womb enlarged forever. Why did I ever come out of the womb to see trouble and sorrow, and to end my days in shame?" And as we're reading this, we're like, what happened? A verse ago, you're singing to the Lord, like everything seemed fine. And if you've ever had a friend that's going through a hard time, you've probably been in a situation like this, where you're talking to them and they're like crying, and then, you know, they get the Kleenex and they're feeling better, and you're like, okay, we're good. And then it all starts again. And you're like, wait a second. We got through this. Like, we made some progress. And then it just erupts. And this is why I love this passage in Jeremiah, because it's real. This is the way life is. Life does not follow this predictable pattern. It's not apply this pattern, apply this recipe, go through these steps, and then you'll feel great and you can go on with your life. It's messy. And we're complicated people, and we can feel opposite things at the same time. We can feel completely depressed and curse the day we were born, and then in the next breath say, sing to the Lord, because we're like that. We don't always make sense, and the stuff that happens within us doesn't always follow the patterns that we think it should. So Jeremiah here, I think, is one of his most raw passages. He goes on a rant, curses the day he was born. He curses the guy that brought the news to his dad. Poor guy, right? All he did was like tell this guy that his wife just had a baby, and Jeremiah's like wishing that he would be destroyed like the cities that were overthrown. I mean, this is serious stuff. Jeremiah is going in a really dark place here. But there's a few things I want to point out. Actually, I compared it to, does anybody else read XKCD? There was a comic, it was a few weeks ago, where like the first block was like, let's be honest. And the second block was like, sometimes I wonder what the point of everything is. And the third block was like, well, maybe not that honest. Did anybody see that one? Yeah. That's kind of like Jeremiah. It's like, whoa, like I'm not sure we want you to be quite this honest, Jeremiah. Because he's just laying it all out there. But a few things are interesting. I don't think he's holding anything back. He's not dressing it up at all. But yet there seem to be lines that he doesn't cross. And that's significant. He doesn't curse God, which is significant. And if you've ever looked at Job or heard people talk about the book of Job, at one time Job's wife encourages him to curse God. And Job says a lot of awful stuff. But also he says, no, I refuse to curse God. And so there seems to be at least some line that Jeremiah is drawing, even in the midst of his rant, that he doesn't cross. He also doesn't curse his parents, which is interesting. I'm not sure why the messenger got the brunt of it. But he doesn't curse his parents, and so which seems to be a natural thing. Like, they were most responsible for his existence. So if you're going to curse someone, like, they seem to be easy targets. But he doesn't. And perhaps there's a line, too, there that he's not willing to cross. And so even in the midst of his really dark times, he seems to have some awareness of some line that you don't quite want to go there. And I think we're aware of that even when things get really bad, there are some things you can say to other people that are really hard to take back. There are some lines you can cross that are really hard to uncross. And finding ways to be honest and expressive and say where you are while acknowledging and honoring those lines is a worthwhile thing. And then he's also asking this why question. Why did I ever come out of the womb? And this is a question that we ask when we go through hard things. Why is this happening to me? Why now? Why not someone else? Why do I have to go through this? And Jeremiah is asking this as a personal question. You sometimes get people, if you're talking to them about God or spiritual things, they'll ask this question as an academic question, right? Why do bad things happen to good people? And that's one type of asking this question. But that's not what Jeremiah is doing. He doesn't want like a theological response. He's asking this from the heart. Why am I going through this? Why me? Why do I have to feel this way? But again, he's asking it of God. He's bringing it to God. He's asking him, why am I going through this? And there is a great history in the scriptures of asking this question of God. So if you're going through times where you're asking why, when you go through times that you will ask, why am I experiencing this, ask God. I'm not sure that he's going to give you a satisfying answer. I'm not sure that it's going to do everything, but that is a question that it is okay to bring to God. God, why? Sometimes I think he does answer. Sometimes the answer is in the moment. Sometimes we see later on, I can actually see how that situation led to something good. Sometimes he gives us an answer to that question. Sometimes he doesn't. He's not completely predictable. But it's okay to ask, and it's okay to bring that question to him. This is an example. We talked about this a little bit on Sunday morning as we're singing this song, because if you haven't caught on, this era that we're in right now of the epic, there's a lot of hard stuff. There's a lot of pain. Cities are being conquered. People are going into exile. This is kind of the bad stuff. That's why I thought it particularly appropriate to get some gelato tonight, you know? You need some ice cream after a passage like this. But I wrote down the phrase that I think is helpful. If you don't lament to God, you're going to complain to the world. And I've seen that in my life. If I don't bring what I feel to God, I'm going to tell everybody else and complain to them. But when I'm able to lament to God and ask him why and complain to him and ask for him to do something about it, then I'm in a better place with other people. That doesn't mean I don't share with them. It doesn't mean I keep it to myself or hide it, but I'm able to share it in a way that's, I think, more beneficial, more helpful, and less kind of, this is happening and you need to do something about it, and all that stuff. You know what I mean? So, just to wrap up this passage, what I really appreciate this passage is it gives us a little bit of everything. It gives us, I think, some steps, some practical things that we can latch onto about what do we do, how do we hear God's voice, how do we relate to him in pain. First thing is we do relate to him. We bring it to God. We're honest with him. We tell him what we're feeling. We talk about what we're going through. We remember what's true. We say these things to ourselves. We remind each other of them. We sing. We put ourselves in situations where we're surrounded by the truth, even when it doesn't feel like it's true. But in the midst of all these practical steps, it's also just super honest that you go through all of those, and yet you're complicated, and you're still going to feel what you feel. And you may even feel worse after you do it. You may feel bad and be like, all right, it's Thursday, I should go to Yaf. Yaf's supposed to make me feel better. Go to Yaf, you go home, and you feel even worse. Like, we do that to people, you know. Just kidding. But you may. It may not get better. You may go back and forth, and that's how we are. That's part of the process. It's not this linear thing that you walk through. It's messy, and it's complicated. But God's in it, and he's present, and he will be present, and when you ask him for help, he will help, and that's this picture that Jeremiah gives us. So let's maybe just pray for a little bit.